Welcome in everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan regardless of the season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. And ready for this, you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Gilders. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who wants to prioritize women's basketball, and it makes sense. Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
That's right. We're going to toot our own horn, live our own truth, drink our own champagne. We're leading off the top of this show with women's basketball, because what a week. Texas sports, what a week. If you're a ranked team who had to play Texas this week, there was one of you who got away, but only one. The rest, Texas did the dang thing. Almost double-digit ranked top 25 win. So a beautiful week to be a Longhorn, and again, none more thrilling than women's basketball. But Gerald, I'm good. Good. It is February. Days are counting down. We're almost to Valentine's Day. And birthday's coming up. Milestones all over the place.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, it is February's a great month for a lot of reasons. My oldest was born in February. Obviously, Valentine's Day, all of those fun things. But we're not here to talk about our personal lives. We're here to talk about Texas basketball taking things personally. Knocking off two. Not one, but two of the top-ranked teams in the conference, getting themselves back into the national championship hunt and into the national championship conversation. Men's basketball, not so much, but that's okay. We'll talk about that tough streak for them. Tennis, firmly in the national championship hunt as well. We'll close the show out with some BOL, Godzillatron, and Bang the Drum. But we'll start with, I can't say the best team running right now, but top three teams probably running right now on campus, number 12, women's basketball. Brings home a pair of massive ranked wins, slides up from 12 to 7 in the poll, go to Waco and absolutely shellack the Bears, number 13 at the time, 67 to 55, and then come home to the Mood and get a big 7-point win over the number 2 team in the country, Kansas State. Absolutely incredible defensive performances, I think, in both of those. Doing what Vic Schaefer loves, that is holding them below 60 points, and that is a recipe for a win for Texas.
That is. That's the magic number, Gerald, and they continue. It really, it's gone from being a meme and art to science. If you don't score 60 points on Texas, you will lose. Schaefer undefeated the past two seasons, and it holds true with two ranked wins where they hold the team under 60 points. Wonderful defense, wonderful execution on both ends of the court. They just avenged two of their three losses on the season. Again, they lost to Baylor immediately after losing star point guard Rory Harmon earlier in the season. Immediate next game, fall to Baylor in a close one at home. Then go on the road, a little bit more seasoned, figured in the rotation, the team, the ball handlers, the responsibilities. Out and they go into Waco's brand new arena and not just win, but win big. It was a little bit sad in their win against number 2 Kansas State, and I jest just a little bit here, but in front of a packed Mood of you know, nearly 9,000 fans screaming their heads off, Texas only got a 7-point win over Kansas State. It's their first win of the season, Gerald. That was not by double digits. They had 20 wins on the year, all of them by double digits until this mere 7-point win. Just an incredible showing, right? I jest that beating the number 2 team in the country by merely 7 is bad. Incredible week. Couldn't have really honestly gone better. I thought Texas played really well. Big, you know, you're seeing kind of a big three right now emerge in codify of Maddie Booker, Aaliyah Moore and Taylor Jones, right? And Texas has a rotation. Like, they're getting players in. Shea Holly's put in good minutes. Jack, or, you know, our girl in Jack Alinga has been kind of really solidifying that second unit and her role in it a bit more as of late. You still see Amina Muhammad and some of the other bigs getting it done in there. But this is Taylor Jones and Aaliyah Moore in the paint owning this team. And then you have a you know, point forward, as we keep saying, of Maddie Booker, who really could go in and do anything inside, but really is tasked with handling the ball. And they're just bigger than other teams, and they figured out how to translate that on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and it's hard to say this is what Vic Schaefer wants with Rory Harmon sidelined for the entire year. But, like, when you think about a Vic Schaefer, like, ideal basketball team, it's like, we're bigger, we're tougher, we're going to dominate the paint, right? And that's really what they're doing. They're dominating defensively. They're really keeping teams from getting hot near the basket, because that's really where a lot of women's basketball is won and lost, right? You think about some of the most dominant runs. You think about what Baylor's dominant run. It was like all of the bigs down low. You think about OU's run with the Paris sisters, right? Bigs down low. Like, that is what Big 12 women's basketball is. And so Texas really taking advantage of the toughness that Vic Schaefer has instilled in this group. And it's hard to argue with needing three players when Rory Harmon's out, right? This was going to be Rory's team. This is going to be Rory's year. And she's not going to be there. And so you've got these, you know, these players stepping up and filling in that role. And this is really the Vic Schaefer mindset. I think it all goes back to the tongue lashing he gave them following an embarrassing loss, right? This is what he was trying to do. They talk about in football, you know, Nick Saban was the king of speaking to his team through the media. Vic has got a lot of that in him, and I think this is the result of that. This is what he was talking about. This is why you come to play basketball for Vic Schaefer at Texas, because you are going to be big and tough and dominant, and you're going to win these types of games, and you're going to go out and regardless of who's out there, whether your All-American, you know, player of the year contender is out there or not, you're going to go out there, you're going to play fundamentally sound, you're going to play tough, you're going to play with determination and with grit, and you're going to get it done. And that showed in both of these wins.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think back in the season when Madison Booker was finding her footing, and she really seems to have found it. There was a play, I think it was against Kansas, where she was driving on a fast break and had a player out on the three-point line. It looked like she was going to, you know, lead the fast break because she's a good passer and floor general. And instead, she kind of pivoted on her ankle from, you know, planting to pass it outside, and instead drives toward the basket, takes the ball, you know, behind her back with a dribble that just absolutely, you know, broke the defender and left her a perfect lane for a layup in the paint. And he said, whoa, this girl's different. And you saw it this week. I mean, 22 points in the Baylor win on the road, and then 20 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds in just kind of every one of those needed to run and facilitate their offense against K-State's great defense as well. It's her third straight 20-point game, fifth 20-plus effort against a ranked opponent this season. I'll say that again, fifth 20-plus effort against a ranked opponent just in the ranked game. She's really showing out as a freshman. It's really something to watch. I mean, I think she's averaging the second most points in ranked games of any player this season. So she is a real force, like not just, oh, she's one of the best freshmen in the country. She's legitimately playing like an All-American and has 20, you know, college games under her belt. So seeing her blossom has been great. Aaliyah Moore struggled against K-State scoring, but got 15 rebounds, a career high, and 10 points. Still got her double-double there, and certainly didn't struggle with 19-7 against Baylor. She's emerging. I didn't even mention Deonna Gaston, who's playing well, very well in that rotation as well. There's some good ball movement inside, kind of high-low, what they're being able to do. But yeah, I just think, you know, Taylor Jones continues to be huge, getting rebounds. She'll have spurts where she'll just score 5, 6, 7 straight points, and it, you know, forces the team to look at her because she's the tallest player on the court, and then the Texas offense can run off of that. But I don't think you can talk about these two games without talking about the defensive performance, holding two really good offenses, really good offenses in Baylor and Kansas State, well below what they, you know, what they usually do and how well they usually put the ball in the hoop.
Yeah, absolutely. Baylor was at 35, I think, percent. There was a 23%, which is at, like, I could probably hit 23%. I mean, I'd shoot 4 and hit 1, right? Like, that's how it goes. But Kansas State, 20 points below their season average, right? on scoring, right? Their lowest. That was their lowest output of the year, 19 of 53. Like, when you say 35.8, like almost 36%, it doesn't sound as bad as 19 of 53. They missed, like, 35 shots in that game, or 34 shots.
They missed 18 of them from three-point range.
Yeah, still. Just nuts. Like, absolutely insane to think about. And so, again, Vic Schaefer basketball. Play defense, be tough, and do what you got to do. For her efforts, Maddie Booker was named the Big 12 Freshman of the Week, the USBWA National Freshman of the Week, which makes her third national award. And for Texas, man, that is just one of nine top 25 wins this week. This was a really big weekend for Texas.
Yeah, this, I mean, again, we'll talk about it in a moment. Would have been perfect if they could put the cherry on top with the men's basketball getting a second ranked win. But pretty much everyone, men's and women's basketball, you know, men won one, but women's, men's and women's tennis, women's golf. I mean, it was a ranked week all around. And we'll talk about it as we run through the DT 40. But just big wins all over campus. A great week to be a Longhorn as we talk about Longhorns, a spring team. And I hit on it my bang the drum last week, right? It was impeccably, imperceivably, unrealistically good months pre-January. Like our fall season and calendar was unbelievably good each month, and then January kind of tanked a bit. We had a rough stretch across multiple of our teams. Well, how do you start February? How about a nearly unblemished month for, you know, sports writ large? Men's basketball still trying to, you know, in the toughest conference, and we'll talk about get there. But just generally, again, sparkling, sterling performances all along the 40 acres that we'll get into in just a moment.
Absolutely. So next up for the ladies, though, before we move on, traveling to TCU on Saturday, trying to keep this win streak going. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. Men's basketball stretches its consecutive ranked games number to six, going 3-3 in that run, which honestly isn't super bad for the Big 12. But they went to Fort Worth and got a big win over the Horned Frogs. But then after the TCU win, they came out against number 14 Iowa State at home. Iowa State went on a big early game run. Texas shot pretty poorly in the first half. They got it close, but again, got it to a single possession within the final couple of minutes, but couldn't fully overcome. Just absolute. Couldn't overcome that slow start and fell by five. I wonder if they're not down by like 73,000 points at halftime, right. If the five-point deficit looks different at the end.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it was a three-point a three-point deficit right towards the end. There were some free throws, you know, and it's one of those, right? Texas took a three, missed it, so they took the layup, make the foul, goes back up to five, right? Maybe they hit that three-pointer. Maybe Iowa State misses free throws. There's things that could have gone, but this was Iowa State's game to lose at home. Played well for 99% of it. If Texas would have won this would have been what in soccer we call a smash and grab performance. Like, you steal a win late that you didn't really deserve. And honestly, especially with the first half play, Texas didn't deserve it. But I did at least like on a really good Iowa State team on the road in a tough place to play, give them credit. The Hilton is, you know, a really tough basketball place to go into and get a win. Texas came back, and there were Iowa State fans, you know, looking around in disbelief as an 18-point lead pretty much vanished. Texas fought back. It's one of those, you know, Aggies would say, we didn't lose, we ran out of time. If they had another 2 minutes on the clock, you have to think Texas was trending in a direction they may have made it real interesting or been able to pull away. But it's tough to win, Gerald, when you shoot 21% from deep as Texas did against Iowa State. The bright spot in that one was Dylan Dessou, you know, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks, just filling up the stat sheet. He hit from deep, he hit from inside. He just was kind of looked like postseason Dessou from last year, what we've been looking for, and we've seen some of those flashes throughout the season. Just have to get a Dessou game with a rest of the team game if we could pair those up. Still waiting for that to happen, but I mean, he was good all week, right? He also was good in that win in Fort Worth with 15.7 rebounds, couple of assists, couple of blocks, steals, all in 26 minutes. So he seems to be rounding into shape, and in that one, right, it's, I don't know if we're calling him midcourt max, but in that TCU win, watching Asmus drill it from the logo just to heat check himself. It wasn't a half ending buzzer beater. He just pulled up. He was touching purple from the TCO logo and just pulled up like a jump shot and just drained a deep, deep Steph Curry range 3-pointer. Again, I don't know if midcourt max is going to stick, but he was electric down the stretch in that TCU win. The whole team played well, but really Asmus was the difference in that one.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around some of the rotation things that Texas is doing. I, as much as I thank Brock Cunningham for his contributions to the program, I'm still, I wonder about his contributions and how much playing time he's been getting, especially in that Iowa State game. I know there's some foul issues, but you can't really fault Max Asmus, at least for his performance in Fort Worth. He scored 13 against Iowa State. I think his shooting, he missed some key shots, but again, that was the whole team, right? Texas only hit essentially one of every 5 3-pointers in that game. So not a great outing for them. So the rare unranked matchup in the Big 12 coming up, you've got Texas hosting Iowa State Texas hosting West Virginia on Saturday. Hopefully you get back in the win column. Speaking of staying in the win column, tennis. This is why I hesitated to call the women the most dominant team or the best team on campus going right now, because both tennis teams, the men and the women, ranked number 4 and number 10, got big wins over the weekend. Number four men dominated Stanford 4-1, while the women swept number 25 Wisconsin and then upset number 4 Georgia with it's technically a 4-3 win, but they clinched it at 4-2 and then they played out the last one. But absolutely incredible weekend on the hard surface for the Horns as they prepare for a national championship run.
Yeah, absolutely. With indoor nationals looming, this was a great confidence boost, beating a really good Stanford team. Texas owns Stanford, 4 straight wins on the
Suck it, trees.
Side in tennis. Look, Stanford, I think, was like 16-1 against us all time until we have turned that series. It's not surprisingly around the same time we have made the Director's Cup interesting. We've started beating them in tennis. There's probably some correlation there. But number 15 Sanders is a good team, but it didn't matter because this Texas men's tennis team is stacked. They do have Florida State before the indoor natty, which will be February 16th. The women's team. This is where I'm watching a little more closely. Number 10 coming into the week, that number will surely shrink. They found the right formula this weekend, I think. But we've said it before, they don't necessarily have a top line. They don't have an Elliot Spezieri on the women's side. They don't have a Peyton Stearns this year, but they have as deep a 3-6 as any team in the country, right? They're just a talented, pretty equal team top to bottom. And that worked out and was on display with an absolute sweep of a top 25 opponent in Wisconsin, never dropping a set. But then getting number 4 Georgia, who's a good team, with the doubles point, Malika Rapolu, Charlotte Shivadapon upsetting someone, 36 spots higher than her, and then Thaisa Pachlikova, as we know how to say, won the singles. Correct, won the singles. She went 4-0 in singles and doubles this week. In fact, was named the Big 12 Player of the Week. But it's shaping up well for both of these programs. Texas is a spring sports team for a reason, and top 10 Texas in full effect.
Absolutely. So next up for the men, they've got Florida on Saturday before the indoor nationals on February 16th. The ladies have a familiar foe on the schedule for the indoor nationals. They've got number 9 Texas A&M this weekend to try to hoist a trophy. Keeping it country club, number 8 women's golf finishes tied for first in the Therese Hessen Regional Challenge. They beat number 24 Arizona State, number 5 USC, and then number 10 Florida in match play. Texas was set to square off against number 6 South Carolina, but a darn rain delay, rain cancellation, kept that from happening, so they called it a double win, which, it is what it is. Play in the rain, or, play mini golf. play whatever they call Tiger Woods nowadays. Do something. Golden Tee. I need a winner, right?
Ooh, but right. I like the idea. Settle these things. Take it indoors to the Golden Tee. I like
that. Yeah. Or you've got the digital golfing things, the simulators that rich people have, right? Just use one of those. Anywho, okay. Farrah O'Keefe and Bo Park, who probably both have one of those somewhere on their home premises, both went 3-0 on the weekend. Big, big weekend for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in this one also there was the number one team, the number four team, you know, who was on the other side of the bracket, but a good South Carolina team that they were set to face off, who had some big wins. Texas had some big wins. This golf team, young as they are, dangerous. No one in the country wants to see them come postseason.
Next up for them, they've got going to potentially our favorite tournament.
Absolutely.
It's a month from now, but it's fine. Going to South Carolina for the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate, March 4th through the 6th.
Go ahead.
Looking through that cracked rear view and hold her hand. Number 2/9, swimming and diving. Combine the men and women for 29 victories against the Horned Frogs on Senior Day. The women with 15 and the men with 14 over those purple reptiles. Are frogs reptiles? I don't know. It's fun.
Hit us in the comments if you know more than us about science. Double kind of home weekend to close out the home stretch. They dominated the Horned Frogs, and then the Horned Frogs stuck around with Rice for the Sterkel Classic, which Texas, you know, equally dominated. Not just, you know, beat their opponent. They put up some world-class times and performances all over the pool in the Sterkel. Kelly Pash, Olivia Bray, and Anna Lent all highlighted that day with top three national performances on the year. Lent at the third fastest in the nation in the 200 breast, and then Pash and Bray posted the number 2 and 3 national times in the 200 fly, behind only fellow Longhorn Emma Stickland's nation-leading time. So they have the 1, 2, and 3 this season, the 200 fly. This really legitimately, like, the women are where the men usually are, where it's like, this should be a very close national championship type of team between diving and swimming, what they have there in the pool. Pash also won the 100 fly with the 10th best time in school history for her troubles. And in the 400 IM, Angie Coe swam the 5th fastest, Campbell Stoll the 6th fastest, and Emma Stickland again with the 9th fastest times in school history.
Next up for the swimmers, they're closing out the regular season at SMU on Friday to the indoor track. Number 7/18, depending on if you're looking at the men or the women. Track and field shows well at the New Mexico Collegiate Classic. We're going to get tired of saying this guy's name, but the Nuge set another record at the school and posted the best score in the heptathlon on the final day, the number 5 score of all time, breaking his record that he set at last year's NCAA championships. Texas, again, all the usual suspects in this one. Indoor track, I'm going to say we're shaping up for a natty run in the indoor.
Yeah, I mean, because of their performance, both teams moved up to number 4 in the USTF CCCA rankings, 14 spot jump for the women. Excited to see that. Akelia Smith posting the NCAA leading mark certainly helped that, with the 3rd best jump in history, only behind, of course, Tara Davis. Leah Foster had the number 6 best jump in school history. She's a freshman, so seeing that. Nini Nubuisi moves to number 2 on the shot put all-time list with her throw, behind only Olympic gold medalist Michelle Carter. So again, if you're behind Olympian superstars with your ranking on the school list, that's great. But yeah, Leo the German breaking his own school record, getting the number 5 all-time record. He just looks set to, you know, continue to smash records, opponents, anything in front of him all season. So excited to see where they can finish up. I believe also in top 10 times in school history, Brian Heron and Logan Popelka, both in the 400, put up the number 3 and number 9 all time. Solid indoor as they're getting ready. I think two more events before they start getting to the ones that count. So they're rounding into form. Coach Flo knows.
Flo getting them going. Up next for them, Eagle invite at Boston College this weekend, continuing to march toward the indoor nationals here in a few weeks. Number 16, baseball. Texas beat Texas. Now, the existing players beat the alum after a couple of big home runs, a couple of 3-run home runs in that one, 5 runs in the 6th to get the win for that one. And we'll have a full preview for both baseball and softball coming at you next week, so look out for that.
Jared, let's run through the world through some burnt orange lenses. We'll start with some staff shakeups on the football side. Director of Player Personnel Billy Glasscock left to take a GM role at Ole Miss. Brandon Harris got promoted, named the GM at Texas in his stead.
Much deserved.
Absolutely. Brandon Harris is a rising star in the industry, been great for a long time. John Michael Jones.
Who?
John Michael Jones.
Who?
Okay. yes, that is a bit. Named the director of player personnel. Taylor Seals and Kendall Perry in the recruiting, both well-earned title promotions. They've already been doing the dang thing for years. But Searles named the director of recruiting. Kendall Perry named the director of recruiting operations. Gerald, Justin Tucker participates in his 7th Pro Bowl. Who did he tie for the most Pro Bowls by a Longhorn?
Phil Dawson?
Ooh, I like that guess. I like it. No. The correct answer is Earl Thomas, not Campbell. Earl Thomas actually had the record with 7, now tied Justin Tucker. Tucker, being a kicker, presumably will break that because he's still the best kicker of all time, and kickers have some longevity, like Phil Dawson. So we'll see. But the nice thing is they continue the streak of 23 straight Pro Bowls with a Longhorn in them.
Phil Dawson only made 1 Pro Bowl. I'm shocked by that.
He was always, like, really consistent, but he had to kick in Cleveland. Like, that's just fair. That's not going to help your stats.
That's fair. That's fair. Anywho, so he won the kick-tack-toe challenge, which I have been anti-Pro Bowl for a while, but turning it into grown-up field day has made it very, very watchable. You have the skills challenge. You saw Jason Kelce harvesting the power of physics, making every high school science teacher smile in that challenge that they ran. Flag football was super fun to watch. Like, just it was just great.
I liked it. But kick-tack-toe may be the best name, so good on Tucker.
Oh, for sure.
for winning that. Just giving an update on the Max Asemus tracker. He's now number 13 on the NCAA Division I men's scoring list, passing Danny Manning of Kansas. Next up is Oscar Robinson of Cincinnati for the number 12 spot. I think he's just a few points behind him. He's also 5th on the career three-pointer list. We're going to just update this as he passes people because the names that he's passing are incredible and he deserves to kind of have his flowers as being an all-time college basketball player. So you have an all-time college basketball player, now an all-time, or at least one of the best in the world professionals. Ariel Atkins, named to the USA Basketball Women's Olympic Qualifying roster, just a 12-player roster. And Ariel Atkins, among it, one of the best basketball players in the world alive right now today, and continues to be a crucial piece on that national team.
Yeah, I mean, she was on that 2020 gold medal team from Tokyo, the 2022 World Cup. So, like, it stands to reason that she'll be on the 2024 team as well.
Absolutely. We talked about the track actives, just throwing in the alumni. These are names you're familiar with. Julian Alfred posted world-leading times this week in both the 60-meter and 200, best times in the world for any level. That's, again, bodes well for world competitions and Olympics. And then Tara Davis had a jump that's the longest long jump in the world as well. We mentioned her up above with some school records, is currently the best jumper in the world. So Longhorn ladies in the professional ranks and track showing out.
Unsurprising.
And then Longhorn men in the professional ranks showing out. Former Longhorn Dylan Fratelli wins the Bahrain Championship, his 3rd career DP World Tour victory, 1st in more than 6 years. Happy to see Dylan Fratelli. Longhorn college golf fans remember him fondly. Finally, Gerald, someone who every Longhorn thinks of fondly, you and I included, Craig Way, named the Texas Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Association. Good to see our guy Craig. Absolutely. One of the best in the biz, one of the best dudes in the biz. Gerald, let's take it home with our last two sections, a bit of Godzilla-tron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
So it's been a travel season for me for the last couple of weeks. I've literally been on the road like 5 of the last 7 days. So, I watched Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, on an airplane, which if you like Guy Ritchie movies, you'll probably like this one. If you don't like Guy Ritchie movies, don't watch this one. Like, that's a really easy recommendation or way to say it. I also finished off Leviathan Wakes, which is the first of the Expanse books. If you're into sci-fi, it's not hard sci-fi because it's like not super like science. It's not like Asimov scientific accuracy, but it's not like space lasers and space wizards. It's like space politics, which I'm totally cool with. And then I also finished off, I finally binged it, season three of my one of my favorite animes, Demon Slayer. I really respect any sort of media property that knows why its fans are there. It was an 11 episode season. Three of those were plot. Eight of those was a big fight. And that's really what we're there for.
I like it. I like it straight to the point. Gerald, I watched a movie I'd somehow never seen, one of my wife's favorite movies, and she was like, it was a rainy day, and she's like, let's watch this rainy day classic. And I was like, I don't think I've seen it. Maybe I have. And we put it on. I was like, nope, haven't seen this. Mm-hmm. Fried Green Tomatoes. Have you seen Fried Green Tomatoes?
I have.
You know, we are both, neither of us have shied away from this, are both emotional men who are happily sensitive and in touch and with the things that the jerk at the tear ducts. This was a super sweet movie, but also like dark and of its time, mm-hmm. and moment in the South. And I think I just knew it as like a chick flick with this, you know, friendship between two women, and then kind of figured out what the story it was actually telling. And it's like, man, it's heavier. It stays with you a little bit. It's a classic, and I now understand why I've heard the name so many times. I don't know if anyone on this podcast hasn't seen it. It's not new by any stretch of the imagination, but just a classic. Kathy Bates, tremendous in it. Classic film. It is, you know, of a time and a place. It's specifically telling a story of the Deep South and the super racist Deep South, and that is the plot mover of the movie. But yeah, I mean, it was well worth a watch, and recommend to anyone who's had that gap in their CV and is missing Fried Green Tomatoes. Also an excuse to then cook Fried Green Tomatoes, which are delicious.
Can't be upset about either of those things. Great movie, great snack/app, and can't go wrong. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruby. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, I'm not going to bang the drum on, horns down. I think we've well established where we stand on that. Put them down. We love it. It's Longhorns' job to shut them up, as we did to TCU student section by going to their house and beating them. So we had a tweet about that. If you don't follow us on Twitter, what are you doing? But yes, I will leave that one there. And instead, I talked about Justin Tucker tying Earl Thomas for the Pro Bowl. On the basketball side, it's gone a little bit under the radar. Kevin Durant was just named an all-star for a record, UT record, 14th time. In fact, he ties Michael Jordan for the fourth most all-stars. He's one behind our guy, Tim Duncan, for third most all-time. Of course, LeBron sits at 20, so it gets a little bit skewed because there's an active player with six more than Durant. But again, it should not be lost that Durant has, you know, more all-star appearances than almost anyone else. And as much as I think Longhorn fans appreciate, respect, laud, change their affiliation for whatever team Durant is playing on, I do think in the national consciousness, Kevin Durant is a little bit underrated. I think it's weird to say that, but like playing in the LeBron era, it's truly the LeBron era, I think has moved Durant out of probably his rightful place in the all-time pantheon. And when he retires, that conversation will need to be had. And it just the other day is, you know, the meme of him saying 70 was going viral. There was another interview question that week that didn't go quite as viral, but Durant had said, why, you know, they were talking about the greatest of all time conversation with LeBron. And Durant said, why am I not in that conversation? And people were roasting him for it. And I don't really get it. I'm not saying he truly is better than Jordan, LeBron. You can make the argument with Kobe, that'll be an interesting one when he gets to the end of his career, but he deserves to be somewhere in that conversation. I don't think it's that crazy to say that he's a top 10, top 15 player of all time, maybe the greatest pure scorer that ever picked up a basketball. He's really improved his defense in the later stages of his career. He's won finals MVPs, MVPs. He's won championships. He's done all the things you want to do. He was the best team on the probably best team of all time. Steph Curry, all that he could do, be damned. That was Kevin Durant, was the best player on that Warriors team. I love Curry, but I do think you know, he gets a little bit lost, maybe because of the way he won his championships. I don't know. But just throwing it out there, a little bit of appreciation for Kevin Durant, an all-time dude, maybe the greatest clapback artist on social media, maybe the most sensitive person on social media as well. But it all feels his game, I guess. You say something bad about him, he might just go drop 40 the next night. So keep tweeting at KD because he's got to keep pushing himself up the all-time ranks.
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned him being the best player on those championship teams, he won both of the finals MVPs for that season, and he, you know, said like that's something to be cognizant of. I'm banging the drum this week on Texas honoring Rodney Page at the women's basketball game. If you don't know who Rodney Page is, it's Black History Month, so it's a time to acquaint yourself with it a little bit. He was the first ever varsity women's basketball coach at the University of Texas, and then also became the first ever Black coach at the University of Texas. So he was honored at the women's basketball game over the weekend. It's just great to see these types of opportunities. I really appreciate how the university has been showing off some of its history and showing off some of the people that maybe we don't necessarily shine as much of light on. It's honestly the spirit of kind of how you and I run this podcast. We're shining light on things that don't normally get as much shine as they should. So Rodney Page, incredible dude, was a coach in the Austin area for like 3 decades and just coached at UT. He coached in Austin ISD, Round Rock ISD. He's now kind of doing like some life coaching and some mentorship and stuff like that. But cool dude by all accounts. Anybody that's ever known, like I've seen that knows him or played for him, has nothing good to say about him. And he only has like 500 followers on Twitter. So like, go follow him. Like he's out there just promoting cool stuff. So I'm banging the drum this week on Rodney Page and Texas history. But that's all I've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
I'll follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I'm at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email at longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with more to talk about. But until next time, thank you so much for tuning in, and hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Top 10 Texas, baby.